Okay, so great to be able to continue here. So let me remind you about the plan. In the slight change, I realized that if I want to be comprehensible, I have to delete the people start the discussion, because I could do it, I did do it, but you wouldn't understand. too much. I mean, research conference, I guess it's okay to be brutal, but lecture series, I think the idea is to really give some detailed accounting, and that is going to be used, I think, for just the first part of this. So there is going to be, to me, an exciting history. I can overview the first part of the mathematics was more or less done when I was studying before coming to UT, but this one was actually started here in UT, very nearby, next room there, where Fernando was. Okay, so before going there, let me also remind you what is our goal, at least for the first two or three lectures. We are trying to understand a way to understand those Poincaré polynomials of the modular space of these ones. I showed you computations for n is 2 and 3, and somehow they look a bit messy. And so one of the aim is to understand the formulas. What are those really meaning, and where do they come from? And what I found exciting recently, because of the last project I will finish with, is that it's very, very useful to think in terms of topological quantum field theory, even if you are not doing representation theory, but just you want to understand these enumerable invariants, somehow you can package all this information, like the Betty numbers, hopefully at the end, inside the topological quantum field theory in two dimensions. So I wanted to remind you, I hope most of you are familiar, that in here would be the place to be familiar with. And this will be only the easiest part of topological quantum field theory. In fact, the two-dimensional part, which is really going to be captured by a single algebraic structure called Frobenius algebras. So let me just give you some few lines to be thinking at the same way. So for me, the exciting thing is that if you have a Frobenius algebra, then you have a topological quantum field theory in two dimensions, and so you are going to get all kinds of nice numbers for any Riemann surface, so for a partition function. And what I hope is that this kind of enumerative invariants we are discussing can all be answered by just giving a Frobenius algebra, and then just turn the handle, compute the partition function, and get those expressions. So that's the hope. So we are going to be at the end looking for these Frobenius algebras. So let me remind you algebraically what they are. First of all, often people work with the complex numbers, but you will see in the last talk, it's maybe good to do a bit more general over any field of characteristic two. Today, it's enough to think about the complex numbers. So then, Frobenius algebra is a finite dimensional, commutative, unital K-algebra, so it's a relatively simple object because it's commutative and because it's finite dimensional. And it has, besides the algebra structure, a non-degenerate pairing. Okay, it's easy, right? The binary pairing is easy, but it has a non-trivial connection with the multiplication, which is sometimes called symmetry. It means something like that. And if you are familiar with this, you know what it means, is that the pairing comes from a trace function, some other non-degenerate trace function, so you can compute the pairing just by knowing what the pairing with one is. So it's a nice definition in itself if you are a pure mathematician, but it's exciting because, for example, it arises in some canonical examples for finite groups. You can look at, for example, the caractering, or, which is going to be more relevant for us, the ring of class functions on the group, which is somehow the center of the algebra of functions on the group, and the product is not the usual point-wise multiplication or convolution. Anyway, so this this is actually the name, I think, originates. Rubinus was studying these kind of algebras when he was thinking about this character theory of groups. Okay, and then there are many other examples. And from my perspective, what's nice is that basically almost all the time they come from some sort of algebraic thing, some sort of representation theory. So you can have such Rubinus algebras attached to affine algebras, or you can have such attached to centers of Hecke algebras, and they all share the same kind of structure. Okay, so what's the connection then with the topological quantum field theory? One of these first non-trivial results, and I'm actually going to give my course about this, so I can read it there, I'm just looking funny, is to prove that giving a Frobenius, such a community Frobenius algebra is equivalent for defining a certain type of two-dimensional topological quantum field theory. And the point is, so you all, I hope, know that this two-dimensional topological quantum field theory gives a vector space to one-dimensional manifolds like a circle, and then it gives you numbers attached to or elements in your field attached to Riemann, closed Riemann surfaces. I don't want to talk about this. The point is that if you know there is up there this Frobenius algebra which you attach to the circle, from this Frobenius algebra you should be able to compute all the topological quantum field theory. And I just give you the formula in the case when the Frobenius algebra is so-called semi-simple. It in particular means that it has a basis from independence, and then when I say orthogonal independence, I mean that the cross products are zero. So in such a, if you have such a thing, then it's what is called semi-simple, and this is the nicest. In that case, you have this beautiful formula, which is often called Berliner formula after the Berliner, who studied these kind of ideas in the first non-trivial case system, which I will discuss in the very last lecture. Anyway, so what you see is that from the algebra, knowing a basis of orthogonal idempotence, you can just compute these numbers, which are attached to your Riemann surface of GFG. And somehow that's the philosophy which some people are working under. If you see a quantity like that, which attaches some number to a Riemann surface of this one, then you can, of course, if you exactly look like this, then of course you can artificially cook up the Frobenius algebra, and this will be its partition function. But somehow, the nice thing is that often these algebras come from deeper representation theory. So yes, we'd like to understand this. In this case, it's not just the group algebra or the center of the group algebra, but it actually comes from a finite group. Okay, so. Great, so let me now give you the example which will be useful for today in the case of class functions of the group with respect to convolution and I think evaluation at one is the trace. Then you get, I hope I got this from, of course, from Dan's paper thing. I hope I did the coefficient right. It's up to some scalar. The characters, which are of course class functions, will turn out to be orthogonal idempotents again with respect to convolution. And so you can write down the partition function by such a formula for the characters of the finite group and compute what the trace of the function on there is. And if I got the result is right, so I hope that I got the previous definition right as well. And then, okay, so this was an abstract story I was telling you, but in this case you had this beautiful understanding, or somehow you, it's not really geometrical, but in a way it's a geometrical understanding what this topological quantum theory counts, because in this case it is just counting the number of homomorphisms of the fundamental group of the Riemann surface to G. Okay, so G is a finite group. It has to look same as the number of covers, the G covers of your Riemann surface. And so, okay, I hope again that you're more or less familiar with this. So this is, of course, I took these kind of things from Dan's paper with him, and he, they do, of course, higher dimensions as well, but this is just a two-dimensional part. Okay, this is, I think, that's a great example because it gives you the philosophy. You have some nice geometrical problem, even though in this case it's just counting the binaries. And then you get a formula which actually comes from Frobenius algebra, and some of the Frobenius algebra, in this case this one, is coming from representation theory of finite or the finite group in this case. And then of course the historically first example was the one arising from SUN Chersanov's theory. So here the structure group in this mathematically interesting story of just a finite group, but in the real, more real examples, this is going to be a ring group like SUN, and this leads to the original example of this idea of finite algebra, and this is what we discussed in the last lecture. Okay, so this just, I just wanted to give you this perspective that if you have some kind of number you can compute from a Riemann surface, if, for example, you plotted the fact that they look like this, you can suspect that there is some sort of topological quantum theory behind this point. So I think that's, I just wanted to put our thinking into this direction because I find it very useful for trying to understand the formulas. Okay, those formulas you've seen so far, unfortunately, are not indicating any feature of topological quantum theory, but somehow we will make some order in them, and then you will get, I think, formulas which will look more and more like such topological quantum formulas. Okay, so now I'm going to change the variety we are discussing. So I'm discussing this moduli space of Higgs bundles. It has all kinds of exciting connections to various fields in physics and in mathematics. And in particular, we are interested in their Betti numbers, and somehow it has always been a nice technique to try to understand Betti numbers of a variety of finite over the complex numbers to try to reduce it over finite field and count points. This is what I already mentioned, Harder and Simon did one of the first works of trying to understand Betti numbers of the moduli space of stable bundles. So you could think maybe that might work for Higgs bundles, but it turns out that's much harder for Higgs bundles, but it actually only recently has been done by Schiffman, and so that will be discussed a little bit in the third talk. But instead, I will change to another variety where the arithmetic is going to turn out to be much simpler, and we could actually combinatorially compute those points of the variety where finite field. And that field, the other variety, is what is called the character variety, and somehow there is this what's now the label non-Hilbert-Hodge theory, which will give a variety attached to a Riemann surface. First, we are attaching, of course, the one we are always talking about, the moduli space of Higgs bundles. So we have, the, as usual, the smooth complex projective of genus G. We fix an R for rank, and we look at the moduli space of semi-stable rank R, namely the Higgs bundles. Okay, even in Nigel's work, these things already appear. So for Nigel, if you recall, I was saying this, but we didn't show any of this because he did better to show geometrical construction of these spaces. For him, this was more like a complex space, and then it had a hyperkähler metric, and somehow from his differential geometric constructions, he also saw the existence of the hyperkähler metric. And what he did was he looked at that complex or Kähler or complex variety or hyperkähler variety in the other complex structure, and he identified that variety, and that's much closer to the variety I'm going to talk about now. So this other algebraic ground combination of the same topological space, the underlying topological space, or differential manifold, even will be the same for this so-called character variety. So the character variety has an advantage of not just talking about abstract moduli spaces of objects, but actually you can write down the variety by equations. So what it is, it's somehow the moduli space of vectors and there some twisty version? Because you remember in the case of Higgs bundles, I always made this assumption, which we also made here, is that D and R should be coprime, and that necessitates a slight twist in the representations we are looking at. If you don't like that, then you should think that I had a puncture on my Riemann surface, and then around the puncture I use there such a twist, and that in fact is correct. So we are looking at representations of the fundamental group into complex groups like GRRC, and these twisted ones, we have all these representations. Do you see what you are written down here? I have written down here is indeed here in the representation if you fix or find this fundamental form of the fundamental group generated by 2G elements in this single relation, and you just see the equation I wrote down is really coming from the fundamental group of the Riemann surface. And then we are interested in the representations up to conjugation, and we divide by conjugating all the matrices simultaneously. If you have an assumption, then of course if I conjugate all of them in the same matrix, this is a central element, so I will get another solution, and so the quotient is going to be the space we care about. And it is much easier, this writing, than the previous one, because it's given by equations. You can, for example, analyze smoothness without more difficult deformation theory kind of arguments you have to do there. Here you just study first the equation, critical points, and then how the action happens on that level set. And then you find that when D and R are co-prime, then these are smooth, non-compact fragments. Okay.
Is it easy to see over here?
No, I don't think it is. But it comes from after all computations. For a more general cases, it was a non-trivial result. I mean, many punctures. This one was maybe less known, the fact that we are in this number. But because what you can do, you can compute, because the dimension, you can show it's equidimensional. So if you can compute, as we do with D, computing the number of points, for example, the leading term is going to give you the number of components. On the Higgs side, there are arguments which actually are different. I'll show you you can reduce the problem to the connectivity of the metric space of stable bundles, which is known by the other means. Okay, so then the non-Abelian Hodge theorem, or this idea about being high-tech here and this being the other complex structure in the high-tech here family, you know that we have the same differential manifold underlying the two different requirements. I mean, you recall this guy was what we call semi-projective. It has large chunks of projective subarrays in it, for example, the open cone. This guy, by construction, is actually an affine, right? You have this affine hypersurface, and this GID quotient, if you are familiar with this, is just affine GID quotient. The quotient is on its face, is an affine variety. So this is an affine variety, it has an affine variety, and this has large projective subarrays, is far from being affine. But as differential manifolds, they are somehow homomorphic. Okay, and that's the work of Menkoff to create these kind of results. And the problem we are facing from the previous lecture is to try to understand the Poincaré polynomial in the space of Higgs bundles. And now we are transferring the problem to the diffeomorphic space of character arrays. Okay, so that's that was a good change of subjects. Now we can talk about character arrays. Oh, because of this nice time allocated to the lecture, I can actually give you an example, so just abstract stuff. And even though previously I assumed G was bigger than 1, I will even talk that because C, that the genus 1 and Z, okay, is that interesting? And, okay, so first, R equals 1 case, right? If R equals 1, then let's think about Higgs bundles. So what is a Higgs bundle? What do you call a Higgs bundle? Was a vector bundle of rank R in this case, and a line bundle. E in this case is a line bundle, the endomorphism of line bundle is just a trivial bundle. So the Higgs field is just a section of the canonical bundle. And so it is really just a vector space through any line bundle. I have a vector space, and so the result is easy to see then the modular space of the rank one. X bundles is just that cotangent bundle of the Jacobian of degree t line bundles on the curve. So this is a nice bit edge, a Abelian variety. No, not a Abelian variety, I have to be careful. It's a torsor for an Abelian variety, right? Because it does not have, for example, an obvious identity. But I can act with degree zero bundles by tensoring. So but it's really just a torus, nice torus topologically. And then it has a trivial cotangent bundle also. So it is really just the product of the vector space and the Jacobian itself. So let's look at, by non-Abelian Hodge theory, what happens on the other side. The character variety sign, what is the character variety of representations of the fundamental group into GL1 in this case? So that's what we are thinking. Of course, we also have to divide by isomorphisms, but here they are trivial. So so I just have to take all generators to some element in GL1, C, and the relation is vacuous in this case. So because we always commute, because the group is Abelian, so the result is just this 2G choice of non-zero complex numbers. So the result is again they are complex those. And of course, you can see that topologically, or even as a differential homotopy, the two are the same, because a single C star topologically is just the product of a circle of its unit circle times some radius, the radial thing, say the positive radius. So you have topologically this is really just an R times the circle, or you have this many, then you have a 2G dimensional compact torus, which will share the same topology as this guy, plus a 2G dimensional real vector space, which will be that. Okay, so that was easy. So I'll show you another easy one. Oh, this will be very easy. Then genus equals zero. Then if you know about vector bundles on P1, then you know that every vector bundle on P1 splits into the sum to direct sum of vector of line bundles. And so that cannot be stable. Such an object cannot be stable. So there are no stable X bundles on genus equals zero. And similarly about the character variety, there isn't a fundamental group. Fundamental group is trivial, and then if D is co-prime to N, then you have a non-trivial twist, and so on. You cannot get one equals non-one. You will not disagree here. So both of them are empty, so we have a nice polymorphism between two copies of empty space. Then we have a slightly trickier, but eventually the similar spirit, the topological. Think it is similar to the first example, so it's the case, and now we allow higher rank vector bundles, but we will be on an elliptic curve, so genus is one. So we can wonder about the character variety is easier to think about, so I just do that. And so what's the character variety when genus is one? We have two matrices, and you want that the commutator is going to be this decent of unity times the identity matrix. Okay, and if you think about that, you can actually find the kind of setup which is in the Stone-Polnagel theorem, and then you can actually find Heisenberg, finite Heisenberg, if I think, to show that, in fact, there are very few solutions, and in fact, you can even find all of them. And basically, from the Stone-Polnagel theorem, you will see that normally what R is, the character variety of genus 1, the dismissive one, is always a two-dimensional complex torus. And similarly, it's, I think, more work. I haven't really, I think I have gone through that, but here, for example, and a very nice description of all vector bundles on elliptic curves. I'm sure it's would be a nice application of those ideas to show that that it's only the space, it's just the potential bundle of DVD vector bundles on C. C now is an elliptic curve. So this is a torsor for the itself. So again, we see the same kind of topological agreement. And so, okay, very good. So we see that it's non-trivial, although in this case everything was simple. But I also would like to point out that somehow, even though the topology is shared, but some of the algebraic geometry is different. Of course, I already mentioned the fact that this is an equine variety, and this has the core in this case is just C itself or the Jacobian up there, so it's a large projective subvariety. But there are other even cohomological differences. This one, for example, has no compactification which would find the degree one cohomology there. So if you compactify, for example, to C2 or even P2, that has no degree one cohomology. You cannot search it down to the degree one cohomology of that. But this guy you can compactify by just compactifying this. This is just a complex line now. So I just add one more point together in my sphere. And of course, when I restrict the cohomology to E, I do see the full cohomology of E. So even on this level, somehow the two cohomologies, algebraically speaking, are already different. And these kind of differences can be captured by what we are going to study next, is what's called the mixture structure on the cohomology of complex algebraic varieties. So what is it? The first, I just talk about the weight filtration of the cohomology of a complex algebraic variety. So I start with X, a complex algebraic variety, which in general could be smooth or non-projective, whatever complex algebraic variety you have. Then E is a precursor of this proof of the real conjectures. We're studying these horse structures, and then we manage to find the beautiful extension of the usual Hodge theory on smooth projective varieties to general ones. And so part of it, I'm not going to be using what talking about the whole mixture structure, I just talk about this weight filtration. So you will have a weight filtration on the cohomology of any complex algebraic variety. It satisfies for us two relevant properties. One, it is functorial, so for example, under restriction, you have a class which is in a certain weight space, then it's going to stay in the same weight space. These kind of properties. And then the other one, which will be for computations important, if I have again two classes of two of certain weights, then their product is going to be in the expected weight space if you multiply them. So it's very nicely related. It's compatible with the ring structure on the cohomology. It's also compatible. Okay, and so what I am going to do now, I'm going to upgrade the problem. So before, we were only interested in Betti numbers, the dimension of the cohomology, but because of this, and then you will see this will actually turn out to be a very useful point of view, we can upgrade the one parameter polynomial, Poincaré polynomial, just encoding the dimension of the cohomology, to encode the dimension of the graded pieces of the equation like that. So T, as before, you'll remember the cohomological degree, and Q, or the square root of Q, you'll remember the weight. Okay, so this is going to be our real aim now for the character variety. Instead of trying to think about the Poincaré polynomial, let's think about this more complicated polynomials to one from the mixed-match polynomial, as we call them. Okay. Of course, the one we had started to be interested in was the Poincaré polynomial. It's just a specialization from further down the integration set of equals 1. You get back the previous Poincaré polynomial. But the nice thing and the useful thing for us is going to be that there is another specialization of the mixed-match polynomial, which have a different approach and a different meaning in itself, and this is called the so-called E polynomial or Serre polynomial, during Serre polynomial, where there are really virtual Hodge polynomial, various names for this. So what you do is that now you take another characteristic computation, so now you set T equals minus 1 in the computation, and you do everything on compactly supporting cohomology. this, for us, is just another specialization of the same two-barrel polynomial, or another way to put it, the mismatch polynomial is a common deformation of the algebraic that I'm really interested in, and this new polynomial, the E polynomial, which I want to show you, is something we can actually compute for the character.
Can you say again what D is, large big D?
D is the dimension, and the complex dimension of X.
Oh.
This is like quartile unity, encoded in a problem. Okay, so then the theorem, which will be used all the time to go between the arithmetic of the variety and the real aim is to compute the E polynomial is the following. So we will have to do arithmetic to get these results. So we will now have to change coefficients from the complex numbers to a finite field. There is no homomorphism, I guess, either way. So what we do is then we take a third of actually structure in the integers. The integers are nice because they now map into both the complex numbers and into the finite, field as well. So now the way to think about this, that instead of a complex algebraic variety, now you imagine that you have an algebraic, they call it scheme or something like that, something which is defined by equations where all the coefficients are integers, and then you can imagine that if you just think about those integers as complex numbers, then you have a complex algebraic variety, that's all variety I'm interested in the first place, or you can take everything modulo, say a prime number, or just map the integers to a finite field, and then you have an equation over a finite field. And the nice thing about finite fields is that equations have finitely many possible solutions over a finite field, because you have a certain number of variables, you can start to just substitute the elements of a finite field, there are finitely many of them, and so eventually you get just finitely many potential solutions, so there will be finitely many solutions. And what we will assume is a strong condition on this scheme or variety M is that if you count these number of solutions of these equations over any finite field, then as a function of Q, so what you should think of that now I try every prime power Q, not just one or two finite fields, basically all of them. I try all the finite fields, I get a number. And in the rare cases, and simple and nice cases, it might happen that the result as a function of Q is going to be a polynomial of Q. I think I'll show you some examples, and I'm sure you already know some, like the affine line itself, it always has over a few Q points, so it's a polynomial in Q. That's this new function. And Katz's theorem says that in such nice circumstances, there is no mystery about the same variety or the complex numbers about its E polynomial, because its E polynomial is precisely this count function over a finite field. And this is a very simple-minded way to use finite field techniques. If you count something over a finite field, and you find this is a polynomial Q, then you know that the result is precisely the E polynomial of the variety that you think of this now as over the complex numbers. And this will be true for us, but the character variety is going to have a polynomial count. And so we will be able to apply Katz's theorem. Of course, it went the other way. We knew the result because the literature, so it's a somehow folklore result in the literature, and we asked Katz to give us a proof. So that's how this theorem was born.
Q is a polynomial of prime power.
Prime power. I think there are all kinds of versions, and everything is more technical because it's not all. We have some excluded primes and all of this, but this is the easiest form of the statement. Okay, so and then again, I can give you some examples for these mixed-notch polynomials. So one is the example we had studied a bit more generally in the previous talk, namely semi-projective toy. You have semi-projective variables of the semi-toy, or as you recall, these are the ones with which had a ceased action, so they have a proper fixed point set, and you have the limit point, the downward, or yeah, downward limit point for any point. And so semi-projective ones, I show you, have a very simple rate filtration of them. In fact, they will have the same kind of rate filtration what the projective, smooth projective ones have. And then this is because first we see that they are smooth, so there are, this is some fact about the rate filtration, there are no weights. You recall the weights on cohomological degree k was interpolating between 0 and 2k. Being smooth excludes half of them, the lower k weights. And then because this guy, if you recall one of the results I had, although that one was exactly missing from the slides, but I said it in words, that the guy retracts, it's a deformation retract, to a projective subvariety, the so-called core. The projective varieties will have restrictions on their weights, the other half. So first I argue that because of this homotopy equivalence, HKM is isomorphic with HKC when you restrict from M to the core, and because of functoriality, the weight spaces will also agree. And then because C guy is proper, you have this that you will have this condition, and you see that there are no weights above K. So what it means is that the only non-trivial weight on degree k cohomology is going to be of weight k. And this is exactly how the cohomology of a smooth projective variety looks like. Okay. And so in this case, what it means is that the weight has to always agree with the cohomological degree. The mixed Hodge polynomial carries precisely the same information as the Poincaré polynomial. There is a simple algebraic connection like that. Then we have also that the E polynomial itself does not form any information, because from the polynomial you can just let me see a Q power, you can just put back the T. So the E polynomial knows everything about the mixed Hodge polynomial divide in these cases. So let me show you an example of something I call the pure of a pure cohomology. This guy, of course, is a moduli space of Higgs bundle, so this argument applies to it. Its core is going to be the zero section of the cotangent bundle, which is this abelian variety. Everything rejects that. And indeed, when you compute the mixed Hodge polynomial, you will get something which is only depending on the square root of Q times T. And how do you see that? Well, you have to really work out the weight. I don't know, we know because it's pure because of this argument. So basically everything reduces to the E polynomial or indeed to the Poincaré polynomial of the variety. So that's meant to be its structure. So it's pure, but you see that it's E polynomial when you set T equals minus 1, we'll have square root of Q's in it, and therefore it cannot prevent. Possibly be, for example, polynomial down. So it's good in one respect, but not definitely in the other. So it's not, doesn't have polynomial down. Now we look at the other side of the non-abelian Hodge theorem. We have, you remember, this complex torus C star to some power. So let's first think about C star, which is the same thing as the invertible elements in your field. So what are the FQ points of that? How many are there? Well, as many as invertible points in FQ, there are points of them. So we know by Cotes' result that the E polynomial of the variety over the complex numbers has to be this Q minus 1. So C star has E polynomial Q minus 1. And now you should think about how this is possible when you compute it in terms of weights. This guy has only two non-trivial cohomologies in degree 0 and 1. So degree 0 is always thing. So the only question is what's the weight of the degree one class, and the only way to pick up this minus one after the Poincaré duality is to have So you see that this cosmology is not pure. The weight is two, not of that non-trivial class there. I'm saying that all weight one element is trivial, so the guy which lives in H1 C-star is of weight two. And indeed, this is the how the polynomial, this Mixed-Hodge polynomial looks like. You see how this is not pure because it's not a polynomial square root of u times t. Okay? So, and then if you just now look at the big torus, then you can compute the Mixed-Hodge polynomial, this one plus u times t times 2g, and you get this count. And in this case, in fact, it is going to be a polynomial count because this guy had an obvious even a linear count, and its powers, then you'll have n minus 1 to the 2g. It's going to be polynomial. So it's always a polynomial count, but a non-pure weight equation. Another observation, which I'm not going to get in mileage in this lecture series, but it's actually important, is somehow the polynomials of this characterize always are going to be polytropic. They will be the same. Both ways. So here you can see this is polynomial, and then I thought it like that. Okay, but this has to do with this P equals W conjecture, which I won't be really discussing. Okay, that's again now the Mixed-Hodge polynomial version of this duality. Okay, so now let me come back to our original purpose. So our original purpose is now for the character variety, let's see if we can count points over a finite field, and let's hope that the count is polynomial count, then we'll get a formula for its p polynomial. And then I should just remind yourself what the character variety was given by an equation, which was just basically the fundamental group have a representation, a dismissive representation into GLM. And if you want to think about that, FQ points or the FQ version of this variety, then basically you will end up studying the number of solutions in GLM FQ of that same equation with the product of the commutators is this distinct root of unity, which now you have to put in your finite field. So therefore, the formulas which I already mentioned in the beginning, which are coming from this big example of topological quantum filters, will be very useful. And this is a slightly twisted version of the same formula. So we have any element in a finite loop G, then the number of solutions of the equation which we exactly have in the case of GMFQ is the product of these commutators, in this case will equal this given element, and then by a long list of papers studying that, starting with similar, not exactly this, but similar counting points in the very first paper which introduced the characters of finite groups by Frobenius. And then, of course, for us, the most relevant one is Dan's paper, Green, because it puts this into this topological quantum theory framework. And then you get a character formula, which is almost the same as the Fermi formula, except that you have to have this thing. And the way how we think about this is the puncture, we have this twist, so you have to put an operator in that puncture, and then there's the effect of that. Anyway, so this is the formula, and this is where everything started. So actually, how it started was that Fernando was giving a presentation, of course, of finite groups, and he was happy to explain to his class the character table of SL2FQ. And I have to check why, but then he was computing precisely this formula for SL2FQ. I don't know if it was before he talked to them or after, but then he talked to them, he can count these points for a finite and then sent him up two floors. and then he ended up, in front of my saying that he can count these points. And I was studying about the Higgs bundles, but I knew that the character variation was diffeomorphic. So this is how it started. So indeed, we managed then after some more efforts to count the number of solutions of the character variety in G and FQ now. And after the fact, so first we count it. So this is the character formula, which is actually non-trivial combinatorially. I show you in this RS2 and 3 character tables, so you can appreciate that it's a big company to actually evaluate such a graph. There's some, but we didn't. I mean, first, as I told you, Fernand really focused on what is RS2. Okay, it was not the twisted one. If you just do the original one without the twist, things are not that nice. But if you do the twisted one, which relate to our smooth varieties, then you get very nice compute results. I'll show you some. Okay? And so we computed it. And then after the computation, you saw this was a polynomial in FQ. It's not really a primary true because the curve vertical has all kinds of things which depend directly on the finite field on Q. So it's not a priori a polynomial, but it turns out to be. And so now you can use Cotes's results from this finite field count to get the formula for the E polynomial, the parameter variety of the complex measures. So one of the immediate applications of this, it was also very nice because this happened in this, not this part. This part, you know, this means Fernando, and the computation, if I change D to another D, then D is so coprime to R, this is just somehow a Galois conjugation in my finite field. Some automorphism of the field extends one R's primitive root of unity into another one. And then the whole formula, if you apply such a Galois automorphism, is invariant under that, and you will get the same result if you change D to D prime. So we noticed that. And then I gave the first talk, I think, on this here, in this room, like 14 years ago, and I had Daniel Alcock in the audience, who is not here today, and he said that he believes, and then it turned out to be true, that this argument has solved the complex numbers, and this year is the first really non-trivial and exciting outcome of these observations, because now the argument is that the same thing works for complex numbers. So you look at the two character varieties where both D and D prime are co-prime to R, then there is some, this one will be admittedly weird automorphism of the complex numbers. It's going to be that automorphism. It sends one these root of humanity primitive one to the other. It's some weird thing, but we know it exists. And then you know that this, you can compute the cohomology using completely algebraic techniques like the Derrand form, and then you can compute that. So the mixed structure of the Bethe filtration completely algebraically. So if I have an automorphism of the field, it will give me an automorphism on my cohomologies, and I will get that these two guys, even though they look really different, they will have to have an isomorphic cohomology. So they are Galois conjugate, and so they will have the same mixed-Hodge polynomial. In particular, they will have the same Betti numbers. And then I told you this is new because for the homogeneous space of stable bundles, this was a feature that the result depending on D. Okay, but somehow here, and for character varieties, and therefore for Higgs bundles, somehow these differences cancel out and things are independent of D. So then I just write what I said in words, and then even for the Higgs moduli space, the Betti numbers for a fixed R and two different Ds, both coprime to R, will be the same. And this is a fact which probably we don't yet know a proof which only uses Higgs moduli space techniques, but I think maybe the very last result I will say in my talk will actually yield that too. But Schiffman's work, for example, this is something he cannot prove, even though he can compute the Betti numbers, but his formula is stable, and he cannot prove that, if I am not mistaken, that things are not depending on D. Okay, so let me give you again explicitly and just to imagine what we started to work with. So here is the parameter table of GL2FQ. This is one of the first ones, in fact, by computing the method. For Venus, for sure, one of these guys very early on, maybe SR2, they were GL2FQ simpler. And so you can see first the list of all the conjugacy classes, how many are there, and then the same number of irreducible characters. And both families actually coming from four, both sets coming four families four types of linguistical representations, and conjugacy class is here depending on the eigenvalues which exist in an algebraic closure of the field. Depending on what they are, you have these four types, and similarly for the linguistical characters. So, but this is actually a Q square minus one times Q square minus one table, and simplify two types like that. And then we computed this character formula, and it turns out that it is useful to add first things according to the types, and then you get some very nice result. And that's how we managed to always work. And so this is it's a big sum, character sum, but you first just do it types by types, and the four types, you will get these four individual results, and now this looks very nice. So this obviously comes from a topological quantum filter, a dense finite group thing, and then I have, just because of all these talks and a new perspective on finite of these Frobenius algebra techniques. To me, I mean, it also looks very much like coming from some avatar Frobenius algebra, but this one is a very big one. It's a Q square minus one dimensional Frobenius algebra, and if this comes from one, it should be four dimensional one. I'm still hesitating about this half, so how can this be half? The rest is fine, right, because they are the sum of things to the G minus one power. So, anyway, but this is the result. And then, of course, and now you see this is a polynomial in Q, so you can indeed use Cotzi's result. This will give us the complex variety E polynomial. When G equals zero, we will get zero, which may not be obvious, but you can check it, or when genus is one, this one is going to give us one, because here is my torus, I divide the GL2 space, this is the PGR2 space, PGR space. Okay, so that was how it started. It's an easy, simple computation, but what really made these results exciting is that we managed to just guess what the T deformation of this should be. You remember the real motivation would be to compute the mixed Hodge polynomial, not this E polynomial. So we want to find how to put T into there so that it will specialize to the Poincaré polynomial. In the RS2 case, exactly here, we had, as I told you last time, we have a completely understandable cohomogeneity. And then if you know the cohomogeneity in terms of generic representations, you know what the weights of the generators are. From that you can, in principle, and in this case in practice as well, after some effort, we could compute the mixed Hodge polynomial of this exactly. So now you have the mixed Hodge polynomial in some form, and you have to see how if there is a T deformation of this formula which gives that. And then we managed to find that. And then with the hard work, we managed to do the RS3 case, and after that, we started to understand how the formula looks like, and from that we managed to guess for every R what's the right T deformation of this calculus formula. So I'm going to present you the result, which actually by now has the advantage to fit into a single line. But in my talks, when I started, they were one slide.
But the previous formula besides the halves also has minus signs, right?
Yeah.
Which you wouldn't see in the
Yeah, I am still, because of this talk and I'm trying to put things, I would like to see this somehow coming.
I mean, there's something with spin structure, so it happens to do with other ones.
We should discuss what exactly I need to do to account for these signs. But it feels to me like something like the Heck algebra. So the Heck algebra is two dimensional, right? I mean, the center of the Heck algebra is the cube deformation of the value, which in this case is just two elements. So somehow I feel this is somehow like the usual Heck algebra thing. So there are this other stuff in the picture. It would be great to have that if you have the understanding of this as well. But I will ask an even harder question in the video. Okay. So now I just show you after all this guessing work and some computations, this is now how it looks like. The conjecture, which is still open, I mean, people don't have really techniques about computing mixed Hodge polynomials. Okay, so I say a few words about what means what here. So first you see the mixed Hodge polynomials here with some other variables. Now you understand why I put back VR. Someone asked me why I didn't have VR. The previous talk, it mattered less, but now we are summing over 4 x, so I don't need to have R. It's also could be confusing that I have a D, which seems in the air, but you can think, say, D is 1, or D is any number co-prime to R. I told you that these are independent. So basically, I have for every R, I have a single such polynomial. So the D doesn't make any difference. Then this is, again, the dimension of the line, some simple expression. So then you have a sum over R and K. This thing is not going to combine these guys in a crazy way. But you have platistic substitutions, meaning that you have these guys raised to the k's power as well. Now you combine all this, you get a big thing, and then you raise everything, and you take exponential of that. So it's a giant combination of these mixed Dodge polynomials, and our conjecture is somehow simplifies into the expression on the left-hand side, which is completely simple for every partition lambda of any integer n. You take all fields, all boxes in the young background of the partition, then you have the flag lengths, the number of poles below it, the arm lengths to the right, and then you just compute this. This looks like the evidence of the variable. I don't know if this is true, but this, of course, looks like the zeta function of the and the same is that once you make this big combination, you get back that. And there is actually an inverse way to go back. You can take just usual log, but you can also unravel this statistic thing. And so this formula actually determines if it's correct. It gives you a conjecture of what is the individual case here. But it's going to be a rational function by construction. And one issue which I will discuss is that we don't know yet that things are polynomial, or didn't know until last year, and now there is a proof. Okay, so this is the conjecture. Again, just some simple examples. When genus is zero, we have that the varieties are empty, I told you, except when R is one, then it's a point, and that translates into this. So here now, when R is one, I get one here, and the higher R, I have nothing. So this is a combinatorial formula, and this we found in a paper of Feynman and Garcia and Feynman. This was actually how we started to know about their work, because later it turns out that all these formalisms have a very close connection with McDonald polynomials. These guys were just any McDonald polynomials, and it comes from some beautiful formalism for McDonald polynomials, this type of formalism. Anyway, so they proved that. Genus 1 case, again, gives you some explicit combinatorial conjecture, because we know that this guy is always notorious for every R, but it will be it's more complicated combinatorially. For every R, you have a torus. You put that in to the right-hand side, and you have geometric series in the T's, and sum it together. So this one was open for a long time. And because of the physics arguments I will discuss very shortly at the end, actually I found that in after geometric engineering, whatever, I'm not really going to discuss that, these kind of formulas make sense for the Hilbert scheme of certain appearing integrals of the Hilbert scheme of points on C2. And in that context, the equivariant Hiltzer-Bruckwein genus thing this guy computed, and I checked that the combinatorial formula actually is a formula which is contained in this paper. And only last year now, two sets of people, one is Fernando with his postdoc Eric Carson, they used, and both these other guys, they used Nekrasov, who called vertex operator, something, I don't know what, some sophisticated combinatorics operators and stuff. And that yielded the same formula. Okay. Then I also wanted to show you how things look like, and this actually helps you to imagine how we really discover these combinatorics. We because I told you for RS2, we did know the E polynomial. I showed you those four terms. And then by the computer, I could compute the mixed touch polynomial by hand, by knowing the structure, putting these weights on the universal generators, knowing the relations, and I just computed it. So for every G, I had the formula, and then I managed to guess what the D deformation should be, and this should be the D deformation. So for those four simple D polynomials, this is the right way to find the D deformation, which looks non-trivial, in fact. And so it was some guessing game already, but this one now we can prove, because I told you we can actually compute the mixed touch polynomial by this knowledge of the cohomogeneity. So now this is a theorem that this is actually, it was finally that used in the paper with Fernando, that this is the mixed touch polynomial of the rank 2 character. Right? Okay, and what am I saying here? Then, of course, the t equals minus 1 specialization of this. If you set t equals minus 1, then this is q minus 1, and this is q minus 1 here, so this gets eaten up there. Everywhere this thing just goes, and you set t equals minus 1, this fraction goes away, and you get back what we had seen before, as it should be. So that was the E polynomial. And then in this case, we actually knew that this is the mixed touch polynomial, so you do get now your own formula for the Poincaré polynomial. But the issue with the Poincaré polynomial is that the specialization of t equals minus 1. Sorry, at u equals 1, right? That was the other specialization. You want u equals 1, and then these two terms set a pole at u equals 1. So there is no immediate specialization term by term, and that causes the computational difficulty to get the u equals 1 specialization. Of course, if the thing adds together to a polynomial in two variables, which it happens to do, then you can just set u equals 1, and then you get the thing, or in this case, you can actually do yourself a little job to compute the 2 equals 1 by a simple residue computation. And then when you do the residue computation, you have to differentiate here. And that's why the Nigel formula helps you. At least when you compare 2 equals 1 of this with Nigel's original formula, that at least explains why these things of g minus 1 should show up, because some of these terms don't differentiate things there. Anyway. But I hope that you agree that, okay, this is a nice computation, because it really is in all kinds of lot of things, but the result is less clear what means what. This is combinatorially, I can tell you everything what it means, and the fact that it's specialized is not trivial, but it's really connected by the research polynomial of this characterizing. Very quickly, because just for you to appreciate the kind of things that we did, so we did rank 3, and then later, Amara Lucarie joined us, that's why he's managed the icon, and that's his version of the table. It's still simple, right, because we don't see all the all the individually reducible characters, we don't see the whole character table, but again, it's put into types, now there are 2, 4, 6, 8 types. Okay. And then this is going to be obviously the mixed touch polynomial in this case. Okay, I'm just looking at when t equals minus 1, you should imagine that again everything collapses, you just get polynomials based on the 2 g minus 2. And one was in the beginning hard to guess. Okay, I was guessing the right form. I knew these coefficients. And then I just had to find the powers here. And then I was actually managing to do that. And then I realized, realized that this is arm length and leg length. We started to look into the literature, very smart length and leg length, and that's how we got to Garcia Kaino. Okay. And so this is Peter Gilton's formula, which computer checks show that this is the U equals 1 deformation. But I'm sure now we have bigger poles. One more or that four, so it's even more complicated to compute this q equals 1.
The one that might be related to t of t is where t is minus 1.
Yeah.
And we still have the thirds.
Yeah. It's the same kind, but you are identifying minus sign, minus third, plus third. I think this, I have to think about it, but these three things might just be something related to the Heck algebra, which is nice and understandable. And this is, but the real thing would be to understand what these other things mean. But I finish with that in a moment. I still have apparently, but I guess it's getting long, but I also wanted to show you some history of how the results affected the computations and what we know about these conjectures. So there is a short history thing. First, we computed with Fernando. In fact, that's how we got to the conjecture in the first place. The Mistos polynomial of the rank 2 character variety is the one coming from the conjecture, because we found the weights of the errors and iterators and the relations. So but it was a non-trivial computation. It's in the paper. Yes. Okay. And then for rank 3, I don't know if you ever proved this combinatorially. If you for this two variable thing, if you set q equals 1, you will get back computer stuff. It did compute with computers, but the genus for sure. Then these guys, I already mentioned this before, r equals 4, their result is something which did not fit in that one page of that paper, but they did check against our conjecture. I think, I don't know if really that affected the sub-computations, or they were corrected that very first time by them. But the nice thing, if you know what you should get, you can, and that's why I asked a lot these kind of ideas, right, to see some structure into the formula, because if they get so big, it's so easy to make a mistake. But if you know what you should want to get, then it's a great way to avoid mistakes. And okay, I will mention a bit at the very end about Y genus. It's a good Y genus, but that specialization of the conjecture I mentioned is somehow simpler, and they managed to do that part of the conjecture, so that was exciting. And then somehow there was a connection with this angle kind of approach with the general invariance for large genus, the actual the fundamental lemma, and the R2's case for everything over a finite field, and they have their own approach into computing things related to them. And they actually are interested in the number of acute points on the Higgs Wiedemann space, and they found the meanings of our conjecture in that word. Even most recently, Chaudhary has a paper which even takes the function and the number field and algo for conjectures. I'm very excited to understand that what the these two variable thing might mean over number fields. So that's great. And then the physicists happened to us in a bit similar. Nigel's work, of course, originated in physics, but what we did had nothing to do with physics. But somehow the results, I don't know what really, no, I think they were studying these kind of things separately, and I will say very quickly in the last slide, just to give you an idea how the physics might lead to these kind of results, what I showed you. But this one is later, so this is the most exciting for me, because it actually is finding not just a physics interpretation of the Poincaré polynomials, which is less exciting maybe, because of course these ones appear everywhere in this physics, of course they should be able to compute it, but why would they be able to compute a two variable thing, which at this point is the Minstock polynomial character, right? It's hard to see what it might mean for Higgs bundles, but that's what my P equals W conjecture is about, which I'm not discussing here. There is an interpretation of the two variable polynomial in the Higgs work, and that is the one these guys have a physics explanation, so that's very exciting. I'm not going to talk about this because it uses the P equals W, which would be another talk. But instead, I will talk about a previous approach by the same guys in 2010, which has the happy ending, hopefully, and now it's proved mathematically is correct. So let me, in the last, almost the last slide, because there will be one more homework or exercise, is that I want to give you a short sketch of the argument which at the end promises a physics-motivated computation of the Petty numbers of the Higgs and Unispaces, and an excitingly a verification of our conjecture. Okay, so what these guys started to do, they started to study the moduli spaces of what they call ADH machines on the Riemann surface of the smooth complex projective curve. I don't know what was the original motivation for them to do, but the best thing, to at least to me, to think about ADH machines, because, okay, I'll show you what they are, okay, they look a bit right, I mean, that already it comes with that of rectal bundle. Not one, but two Higgs field kind of thing, and two more sections. And so I tell you what they are, because it's fair if I talk about the machines, what they are. Then you have a usual kind of Higgs field, but you have another one that is not fixed by a canonical bundle, and you have one section of the bundle, and you also have a section of the dual bundle tensor of the canonical bundle. And then you have the ADHM equation. You should think of this as somehow a vector bundle version of the ADHM. Right, so if this is your ADHM figure. You have a ending here. So here you have your E. And this vertex here, you have just the trivial bundle O. And you have, when you do this little story, you have one matrix like this way. And then another one like that way, in this case it's the same. So one will be one Higgs field, the other one will be the other Higgs field, and then you have one map from here to there, that's the section, and then you will have one into the dual tensor K. So now the idea is to have representations of viewers over curves. But that, I don't think that was the motivation. The real motivation, I think, is that such a complicated looking object by a VNR correspondence, which I should or would have talked about on the Higgs bundles, to a Higgs bundle, it gives you a certain kind of sheaf on the cotangent bundle of the Higgs bundle, on the total space of the canonical bundle. But here, there is a VNR kind of correspondence between such ADHM sheaves and certain sheaves on the total space of the rank 2 bundle, or C. Case. So you take on your curve a rank 2 vector bundle. It is found exactly so that the total space is a polynomial. That's because somehow these counting theories are better developed in the polynomial case. You take the total space, then you have a sheaf F on this, which is torsion free, pure measure 1, things like that, rank 1. And it might also have a section, I think. It's like what you do in stable pair theory. But the stability conditions will have a far better in them, and so that's what the next idea. So, again, the motivation is that if you're studying certain sheaves on local curve polynomial fields like this, select 2-1 over C, that data can be translated into exactly this kind of ADHM sheaves on the curve. And then you can study the moduli spaces of stability or moduli spaces of stable objects, but here the stability conditions are parameterized by a real number. And then you have this whole crossing phenomenon and all that. And this is what they managed to understand using physics language. So they were computing, okay, at that point it was not clear what they were computing because no one managed to refine Donald's Thomas invariance. So you look at the moduli space of such ADHM sheaves with respect to given things, the delta stability coefficients of the real number. Then, if there was such a refined Donald's Thomas theory, then that would give you a refined polynomial. Again, the idea is that some moduli space attached to this one should distribute the weight polynomial, the E polynomial. Okay, so this one at that time was all conjectural that they even make sense. But if they assume they make sense, then they can of course compute it and they can manipulate it. And so one thing they could see by physics, so if the stability condition is large, delta is large, then it's somehow, actually this is exactly, I think, the signatures of Ponder Thomas. And in that case, physics tells you that there is some geometric engineering construction, which I I don't know if people understand what, how you can do it geometrically, even though geometry is in the name, but it just tells you that you have to compute, you can compute these invariants by computing some equivalent K3 classes of the inputs and your inputs of C2. They tell you precisely which one. So, maybe so this way they would know what these invariants are. And they also could work out what the wall crossing should be. Again, the highly non-trivial wall crossing happens if you have your finitely many critical values for the stability condition. You have, of course, infinitely very large ones and very small ones. But in between, when you move the stability finally, you will cross these critical values, and then you have this wall crossing to compute. And what they found is that in the computation, everything is very heuristic, right? Because it's non-defined. These things were non-defined at the time. You will see the quite very polynomials of all kinds of lower rank moduli space of Higgs bundles. And I wish I could show you how the Higgs bundles should appear. I see it in the papers here and there. But because things are not defined, I cannot really see that. But somehow lower rank Higgs bundles appear, and then you move from one long quantity to another long quantity, and you know hypothetically how what happens in the wall crossing, you will get a recursion relation for the individual Wackerian polynomials of the Higgs moduli space. You can obtain it. They obtain some recursive formula for this, which is highly non-trivial. But excitingly for us, my postdoc at the time, Sergei Mozgoboy, managed to prove that that these recursive relations are only solvable by Orr conjecture for Wackerian polynomial, providing that the two variable polynomial, the least such polynomial, is a polynomial. So, provided that something you already expected is true, this approach actually gives the Poincaré polynomials we also conjecture by arithmetic techniques. But this is highly physics, so it's really exciting. And even more exciting are two things. One is that last year, my now postdoc, Anton, managed to actually give really non-trivial proof, combinatorially algebraic combinatorial proof in angular theory that that this and all many, many similar mixed-touch polynomials or more complicated polynomials are actually polynomials. The Orr conjectures and the more generalized versions, they all yield polynomials. And finally, that's the end of this before the homework, is that there is an announcement I heard from Davesh Maulik in talks, and that Pinkston managed to fill the hole. So there are, I think, three difficulties. First, to define what we are talking about. Apparently, that's done. Right? Then you have the geometric engineering, and that was a non-trivial computation. They used a lot of techniques, as Okunkor-Nekrasov approach, to compute the two extremes. And finally, which was turned out to be, I think, that's what Rash told me, the most difficult is to reproduce the wall-crossing formulas of these people, but they now claim that everything they can prove now, so that at the end it should yield the Poincaré polynomials, which we conjecture based on arithmetic techniques, should be correct. Anyway, so that's for me very exciting to see arithmetic stuff and then physics come and help us out and eventually mathematicians use those ideas to prove things in this way. So let me finish with this homework, because I really like this new framework in my mind anyway, to try to think everything, all these numbers and stuff which comes out, polynomials in terms of the topological quantum field theories. So I already mentioned this problem in a softer form. And so first of all, we generalize a little bit further. There are multiple versions of these, even more complicated than that. Here I'm just putting in the whole structure. Until now I only put in the weight filtration, I also put in the watch filtration and we have the variable. The T variable, the conjugal degree, will also come into two X and Y, which we remember the Hodge decomposition as well. I'm just giving you formulas now. So this is how to T deform, X, Y deform the T thing. So you remember that the thing before was something to the 2G, something to the 2G, and just like the curve has half of its H1 of type 1,0 and the other half 0,1, you will separate things like that as well here and there. And this also turns out to be a polynomial. In fact, with P equals W conjecture, we have an image for this. This is somehow the perverse Hodge polynomial. So, and this is proved because in these two cases, you understand everything extremely well. So this has some geometric meaning. But now you want to think, can this be the result somehow, as it is, of a topological quantum field theory? Okay, one issue is about these times and one of the things I don't know. But the other one is that this thing is not really the power of something to G minus 1. This is okay. This one is one off. And this denominator shouldn't be there either. But there is one interesting specialization, namely the one when you set x equals minus 1. So when you set x equals minus 1 in the two variable thing, so first you set 2 equals 1. I told you this gives you that. The E polynomial on two variables in the Hodge coefficient of the Higgs Mundy space. And you set X equals minus 1, then this is what is known as the Ilseberg hygiene of this thing. So that's nice. But you could just set before, not setting Q equals 1, keep Q equals 1, and set X equals minus 1 in here. And I noticed this value early on, that then you get polynomials. Then if X is minus 1, then Q minus 1, this thing goes into there, gives you G minus 1, and X equals minus 1, this thing divides into there, G minus 1, and everywhere else. So this is, to me now, is the most exciting version, because this is two variable. It knows about Maclaurin polynomials in the extensions. It has the same combinatorics, but things now look much closer to the coming from a topological point of view. Right now, it's a sum of things raised to the G minus 1 power. Okay, we have to account for these small signs and stuff, but my question is, does this somehow come from something QFT? When T equals minus 1, Y equals 1, I think. I think when Y equals 1, this was the previous one we looked at, or minus 1, and now this is the Y deformation. Okay, so this is yes. Any questions?
I was wondering why does the Higgs moduli space, the E polynomial of the Higgs moduli space?
So it's very funny because back then I was working with formulas, but I was interested in the Higgs moduli space to start with. Then I had this. We had this conjecture about the mismatch, but in the Karak-Tel variety, and you are right, in the Karak-Tel variety, there is no, everything is Hodge state. There is no X, Y, I mean, it's trivial. But then I wanted to see if I can get from this formalism the X, Y, term, the X moduli space, and I found, yes, you do it like that, then U equals 1. But it somehow makes sense too, right? Because I told you these things in the QT bird already look like the zeta function of the curve. So you just try to modify the formula, you know, that the x and y should go to how it goes into the zeta function, it only goes to half of the 2g, you know. So anyway, so I had some clues. So it was just a guess, but it worked. And it worked for rank 3 as well. And then much later, they actually now have a geometrical meaning, because now we have a meaning for the gate filtration conjecturally on the Higgs side, named the perverse filtration. The perverse filtration is now known to be compatible with the Hodge structure, and so what this should be, or it is now, is probably a theorem. I take the perverse filtration on the Higgs moduli space, I take the gradient of that, and I take the Hodge structure there, and then you have three variable thing, one for the perversity and the two for the Hodge structures, and this is it. Long after I first wrote down, this actually now has a meaning. This should be the perverse Hodge polynomial. Both the Higgs minimum space.
So the X and Y on the Higgs side is interpreted is to do with the perverse filtration?
No, Q is interpreted to do with the perverse filtration, and X and Y have to do with the whole structure, the whole numbers on the main pieces of the perverse filtration. But then the exciting thing, what I am trying to point out here, which I already noticed back then in formula 12, that when you said X equals minus 1, which should somehow be thought of as the perverse or combined genus, but no one knows what this might mean. What is the weird set of perverse genus and combined genus? But somehow in that case, you get things which look much more like things in topological quantum field theory. And I asked this from Tavesh because Maulik and Todon, I think, they have now these ideas which have to do with the perverse Hodge things. So if they can make sense of this. So everyone works in topological quantum genera because they are k-theoretical things, so these are not blue, they should be topological in some sense. But this is a perverse extension, and they also seem to be also very nice, like topological in some sense.
Other questions?
Yeah, I'm trying to make still sense out of this picture on the right, like when you talk about what I call the ACHM, what's whatever the H was.
These are famous people, so you know. Jane Pan, Eugene, and Money.
So if I would do the same thing there, if I would replace the vector bundle by just C2, right, by just a vector space CN, I would get the Hilbert scheme of n points on C2, right?
Yeah.
So is this some kind of relative Hilbert scheme over the curve, or?
Yeah. So the idea is, right, that you have some sort of rank one dimensional one sheet, which is a non-dimensional support, and somehow this is the only. So you should think of this rank two vector bundle. That's where your Hilbert scheme is. But then you have some point in the Hilbert scheme, so this kind of thing. You move it around, especially in the curve in the base.
It's just a family of points in Hilbert scheme over the curve.
Yeah. But they grew together to get this dimension, this sheaf, which is a one-dimensional support on the total space, and which intersects every fiber, as you say, in finite even points. So you have a
other questions?
All right, so the third lecture will be Tuesday at 12:30. Let's thank Tomasz again.